This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned. Imagine being confronted by your spouse. He has a gun. Before you know it, you're shot. Now imagine you're 911, speaking to a husband who has just told you that he shot his wife. You take the call. You are a witness. Your testimony helps send him away for life. This is what it's like within the trenches. In this episode, you will hear stories from the I Am 901 movement, a movement I started to fight the reclassification of dispatchers from clerical to protective and bring awareness to the types of calls that 901 dispatchers answer on a daily basis. This is a live audience episode that was recorded with the 901 professionals who attended the Iowa APCO conference. The stories are powerful. As one attendee put it, that moment wrecked everyone in the room. Then we grew together. I couldn't have said it any better myself. Now, you heard the warning at the beginning, but I must warn you again and add that if you suffer from PTSD or have suicidal tendencies, you are listening at your own risk. The stories you're about to hear are all true and come from the dispatchers who live them. While some stories have a good outcome, the majority are horrifying. This is our reality. Your worst day is our everyday. So let's start with a bang. I want you to imagine each story. Become the dispatcher who has taken each call and imagine listening. I took the call when my 22-year-old son's best friend found his dad not breathing. As he was screaming for help, I kept saying his name and telling him I will help him do CPR, but it was too late. He was gone. I am 911. I took your call. Your best friend had OD'd on heroin in the bed next to you. He was 21. We tried CPR. You tried so hard to bring him back. Your cries and screams for him to come back hurt so bad. I graduated with your best friend's brother. I saw you a few days later at the fabric store. You looked so broken. I wanted to hug you, assure you that you did your best. But I could not, because we are only heard, never seen. I am 911. You came home after school, and as you opened your garage, your husband fell out, and you were screaming, there was so much blood. As I was talking to you, you screamed, there is a gun. Your husband shot himself in the head. I saw him 2 hours prior to taking your call, and he waved at me. I am your neighbor. I drive by the garage every single day, numerous times a day, just to get to my house. It still haunts me. I am 911. Severely distraught doesn't seem to explain the emotion when you found your boyfriend's body. Help arrived only a minute after you took the gun he used and ended your own life while still on the phone. I am 911. You told me where to find your body after you killed yourself. I couldn't talk you out of it. I am 911. I refused to cancel the ambulance. Your doctor drove by and convinced you to go to the hospital. Because of this, you lived many more years. I am 911. You told me why you were calling. so that your mother wouldn't find your body. You killed yourself right after that. I am 911. You and your baby were trapped in a fire. I heard you struggle, then die. Now, you are forever etched in my memory. I am 911. You wanted to die because your mom loved her boyfriend more than you. You told me you were 12. I am 911. She's cold. That's all you could say. Over and over again. I am 911. You called 911 and said you just shot your wife. I testified at your murder trial. My testimony helped send you to prison for life. I am 911. My husband was an officer. I was working in comms. He was in a pursuit and started screaming about a car rolling over. A captain in the room asked if I was okay. I told him that if he died, it would be while doing what he loved. I am 911. I was on the radio when the officer jumped through the picture window to cut you down. You lived. I am 911. Those are just a few stories from Imagine Listening, an extension of the podcast featuring the stories of the I Am 911 movement. The following audio was recorded at the 2018 Iowa APCO Conference. We shared stories. We let our emotions come out, and we healed together. I had an amazing time there, and I look forward to going back to visit.
But Joe, do you have another mic that you might be able to hand out to anybody who has a story to start? So I have a few stories that I can start this out with to get us started here. I took the call when my 22-year-old son's best friend found his dad not breathing. As he was screaming for help, I kept saying his name and telling him I will help him to do CPR, but it was too late. He was gone. I am 911. I sent the officers to the cliff. The caller said you were on. I heard the strain in his voice when he said you were on the other side of the fence, and I still feel the harsh silence in the room when he said, she jumped. I hope you're at peace. I am 911. Does anyone have a story? And it doesn't even have to be done in this form. Maybe a call that has stuck with you, something that you want to share. Again, you don't have to give your name or nothing like that. You're just sharing your story.
We've been partners for 10 years. Okay, we've been partners for 10 years. We had a call from a man in Oregon, and we are in Iowa, that had a girlfriend in the area, and he just wanted to call and tell her goodbye. And it was the end of my shift, and my partner was still on, and I talked to him for 2 hours, our resources. We got his name, we got his phone number, we found out where he was, and we sent the police. Very upset with me, but I hope he's still around.
Good. Thank you. Anyone else have a story? What about you, Joe? You got a story?
I got one in the back here, Mr. Yes, in the back. I'm hustling.
You drove 3 hours away from where you live to a farm field driveway, so none of your family or friends would have any idea where you were. You had no idea where you were. This was before cell phone location was even a thing whatsoever. You told me a general idea of where you were, then you shot yourself while you were still on the phone with me, and we had to try to have responders attempt to find you. I am 911.
Thank you. This is the hard part, I know. Anyone else?
I took your 911 call of your 12-year-old child that was dying in your arms. You cried, screamed, and begged me to help save your child that was dying of cancer. She died in your arms. Hashtag I am 911.
Thank you.
I went home after 12 hours and hugged my 10-year-old son a little tighter after I took the 13-year-old suicide. I am 911.
Thank you.
Took a suicidal call. She tried slitting her wrists in the bathtub, tried drowning herself several ways, and she insisted that I was a fucking pig. I allowed to be called fucking pig. We ended up getting into the house and helping save her life and get her onto the right track. Hashtag I am 911.
Thank you.
I'd actually just returned to work from my uncle's suicide, who is a deputy sheriff in the county where I live. And it'd been just the first few calls that I had taken, a gentleman who had a gun to his head was going to kill himself. And we had gotten information. I'd asked him to stay on the phone with me for just a few more minutes and explain to him what my family had just been through. And luckily we had gotten police there, had still been talking to him, letting him know that it'd be okay. And officers had shot him with a less than lethal. And he had called me several explanatives across the phone. And luckily they'd taken him into custody, got him transported and got him help. To this day, I still hope that he is alive. I don't know the rest of the story on that, but I hope that he has forgiven me for what had happened. And luckily he had survived what he had done, called for help. Unfortunately, my uncle had not and had taken his own life with a service weapon. But I did my job that day for him to save his life. Unfortunately, we were not able to help my uncle at that time, but I am 911.
Thank you.
I hate that these are all suicide calls, but I've been doing this for a while now, and that was 19, maybe a year and a half out of high school when I started working for the sheriff's office. And I was assigned to the midnight shift, and I took a call about 4 o'clock in the morning from a frantic lady whose husband was out of town. And she was worried sick. There was somebody screaming and yelling and moaning at her front door, trying to bang and beat the door down. So I talked to her as the officers were responding, and they were coming from a long ways away. So it was about 14, 15 minutes into the call when the person actually broke the door down. And he had been about a block away when he had doused himself in gasoline, lit himself on fire, blew the windows out of his car, crawled out, crawled down the street to her house to do it. And she went from thinking it was a burglar to having to coax her into providing medical attention to this horrific burn victim that had just broken into her house. And it's awful. But, you know, I never found out how the guy did, but just to be able to have the women help this guy was, I mean, enough. So.
Thank you.
I am 911.
Powerful stories. You know, these calls, they stick with us. And sometimes when we're in a setting like this and we're all talking to each other, calls that you've taken that you think you've buried end up coming up. I say that because, you know, I've been out of dispatch for just over 4 years now. And when I'm talking to my mom or my siblings or my wife or whichever, calls start popping up. And I'm thinking, I didn't even remember I had taken that call. Just talking with people and just sharing. You know, I took a call once where I actually wrote about it. I was supposed to do a memoir on something that changed me in class, and it dealt with a call that I took. And like the gentleman back there said, they're all suicidal calls. This is a suicidal call as well. And it dealt with it was a girlfriend and two brothers. But when the call came in, I didn't realize there were two males. I thought I heard two women screaming. Because my phone system, the way it worked, and it will probably any one of them, if you hit the hands-free first, you hear everything right before you pick up the handset. And I hit the button to try to raise somebody to get the call, and that call sticks with me today. So I pick up the phone, and I hear what I thought, again, two women screaming. And I'm trying to get some a way to get in there to ask, where are you? What is going on? And I'm asking over and over and over, and then I realize she can't hear me. This is like white noise, or background noise, me just talking. So I brought my voice down to a whisper, and it was something that I remember from when I was working in Florida in my beginner's training course, where they said it doesn't work with everyone, but there's a way to trick people on the phone where if you bring your voice down to a whisper, they stop because they want to know, is there somebody there? So I did. I brought my voice down to a whisper, and she did stop. Thank God it actually worked. And I was able to get in and ask, what is your address? What is going on? And she said that her boyfriend's brother had just shot himself in the head. And I said, who's the other female out there that's screaming? And she goes, there's no other girl here but me. That's my boyfriend. So he was screaming so loud and hard at such a high pitch because his brother had just shot himself right in front of him that, you know, he sounded like a female. And that's what I thought. So we got everybody going out there, and I'm, you know, professional, doing everything I'm supposed to be doing. But in the back of my head, I'm thinking about, like, my brother. You know, what if? So we're going through this call, and I can hear him running back and forth. And she's trying to get the gun away from him, and I'm trying to get her into a safe place because she doesn't need to be around that. He's hysterical himself. So this is what happened. They were all at the bar. The one brother was depressed because of a bad breakup. And they'd been drinking and stuff, and he kept saying, you know, I want to kill myself. You know, she left me. I don't have a reason to live anymore. The brother kept telling him, you're fine, man. You're fine. It'll be okay. So they get back home, and the one brother's standing outside, and the other one comes up to him, and he tells him again, man, I can't do this. I want to kill myself. So he ends up going and getting a gun that's loaded and gives him the gun and says, if you're going to do it, go ahead and do it, thinking that he would realize that he was being stupid and that he wouldn't do it. And it was the complete opposite. He shot himself right in front of him. And the brother's screaming, running back and forth in and out and saying, you know, I don't deserve to live either. I can't believe he did it. I can't believe he fucking did it. And going back and forth, he gets the gun and she's screaming. And he ends up running outside and I'm waiting for a gunshot. But it doesn't happen. He ends up running back inside and drops the gun and runs outside. And she tells me that he's not there anymore. So that he's outside. So I tell her to get the gun and secure it and for her to get out of there as well. I tell her that police are headed that way, that EMS is headed that way, that everyone is headed that way to help them. And she tells him the same thing. Everybody's coming over here to help us. EMS is headed there. And the one thing that I will never forget is him screaming, what is EMS going to do? My brother's face is all over the snow. It was crazy. I'll never forget that. I can still hear it now. So they get out there, and I'm off the call, and my supervisor looks at me, and she goes, are you all right? And of course, because there's this stigma that if we ask for help, that we're weak. I was that person at that time. Of course, I'm okay. I was not okay. So I get out of work at like 5 in the morning, and I call up my brother, waiting for him to answer, and he finally does. He's like, what the hell do you want? I was like, oh, well, that's good. You know, he said that to me, so it's not as you know, traumatic as what I think it's going to be talking to him. And I said, I love you, man. And he goes, what? I said, I love you. He goes, shut the hell up. What's wrong? So then I tell him about this call. And at the end, he says, I love you too. These calls that stay with us, that we're connected with, how we deal with them. And that's what this is all about. We got a story over there.
I took your 911 call. You were calling that your husband had collapsed and was in cardiac arrest. In talking to you while we're doing CPR, you tell me he's second generation firefighter on the service who
and he works with my boss's partner, who's standing over my shoulder. And I'd worked you through, talked you through CPR until we got our ambulance there. Hashtag IM911.
Thank you. Anyone else have a story?
I took the call of a daughter who walked in to give soup to her sick mother, who found her father and mother both laying dead in their house, and walked them through CPR on one of them until someone could get there. I am 911.
Thank you. As you listen to all these calls, it makes you wonder why anyone would think that you are classified or should be classified as clerical, right? All these stories. Again, you can't make this shit up.
I took a call from a female crying that a baby was not breathing. I recognized the address. It was a daycare provider of one of our officers who had just dropped off his 11-month-old baby an hour ago so that he could come into work for his sergeant promotion. So we're trying to revive the baby. I'm concerned about the address and the nature of the call going out over the radio, which it did. The baby died. I am 911.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
What about an opinion? Why do you think people, what is it that people don't understand? You know, that some people think you're just there to answer the phone, that you are not emotionally involved, whether it be the OMB or whoever. Anybody have a thought on that? Not one that they want to share, because there'd be a lot of swearing, huh? This gentleman right here, he's coming with the mic. He's running. Don't fall, dude.
I think there's a lack of understanding out there on the part of most of the public that they don't see behind the walls and understand the training and the commitment that these people have put into their work. They think they're talking to some kind of a desk clerk at the front end of the PD or the sheriff's office or maybe some bookkeeper at the fire department. I don't think they realize they're talking to a highly trained professional. We've been called every name in the book on some occasions.
Yeah.
Because they think they may not like, you know, they may not like law enforcement at all, but yet they have to talk to somebody with a badge. That's who they think they're talking to. And we get called every name that those guys get called some days. So I think there's a misconception on who they're making contact with when they call 911.
Excellent. Thank you.
I took a call from a guy. Couldn't understand him very well. He really had a difficult time speaking. He was slurring his speech. Said something about being wet, being cold. I believe it was a business line call. It wasn't on the 911 line. We had no GPS tracking of where he was. I tried to investigate. He couldn't tell me where he was either. I couldn't understand him part of the time. Called his wife to know to check and see if she knew where he was able to get his information enough to call his wife. And she said, well, he's a crop adjuster and he left early this morning. I don't know. And I said, okay, well, I'm on the line with him. I had him on hold. I'm trying to figure out where he is. I don't know if he's having a medical issue or exactly what's going on, but I'm trying to figure it out. And she gave me a number for his work partner or somebody that does the crop adjusting with him. And I called him and I said, well, hey, you know, do you know where he was going today? Do you know what's going on? Explain the situation to him. He gave me some ideas. Went back and all the time I'm checking back in with him, talking to him on the phone, really have no idea where to send anybody. And eventually I'm able to talk to him enough and understand enough that he says that he has, that he's at his barn, that that it's raining that day. And he says something about his legs getting tangled in the weeds and he fell. And I'm able to understand that he was trying to, was telling me that he was by the barn. And so I thought that's what I understood. And so I called the wife again and I said, could you check and see, is his vehicle gone? And she goes out to the garage and says, you know what, his truck is right out here. I said, great, let me get some people paged and sent that way. I think he's fallen. Maybe he's having a stroke or something, but let's get some help. So I checked back in with him, let him know we got help coming. And I told his wife that where he was, and he says, don't let her come down here. And at the time, you know, I thought that he probably didn't want her to fall as well. You know, they were both kind of older. And I said, well, okay. So I went and I tell her, I said, hey, he doesn't want you to come down there. And I go back. I said, hey, I just spoke with her. I told her not to come down there. But I said, hey, you know, I don't think she's going to listen. And he kind of laughs a little bit. And I said, yeah, you know, your wife doesn't always listen to you. And he laughed again and says, no. And I said, well, mine doesn't listen to me either. The ambulance gets on scene and they immediately start calling for law enforcement, which seemed odd. Come to find out, he was down by the barn trying to kill a raccoon or something with his 22 rifle, and he slipped. And when he slipped, he shot himself in the face. He died in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. The call lasted 17 minutes. And I was the last one that had a conversation with him.
Thank you very, very much to all of you for being here, for sharing your stories. If I could please, a round of applause for all those who shared, please.
Those are just some stories from the 911 professionals of Iowa. I was welcomed with open arms. I've made lifelong friendships, and it was an honor to meet each and every one of them. As I go into the wrap-up of this episode, I want to address something. Recently, a company has decided to sell merchandise with a headset and design that is similar to mine. It's so similar that I have received messages and tags since they did it. I hope that this has not been done because I declined to sell IM 911 merchandise through them. I hope there's a better reason than that. So I addressed it on the podcast fan page, and I will read what I said here. But for you to picture what that post is, the similar headset and design is a picture that I posted on the Facebook fan page. If you look for it, you'll see it. The post reads, I designed this and posted it last August to mark the one-year anniversary of the IM 911 movement. I thank you all for the support, and I truly believe we are making a difference. It started out as one thing, but has grown to be so much more. We acknowledge the work that 911 professionals do on a daily basis and the stress that comes with it. I am proud of this movement and will defend it. Yesterday, several people reached out to me because there is a company selling merchandise with a similar design and headset. I have fought many people trying to make a buck off me, but in the end, as long as I keep doing good things and fighting for dispatchers to have a voice and share their stories, I'm happy. This has always been to help educate us as a thin gold line, to heal, to grow, and to drop the stigma of those thinking they will look weak if they ask for help. This has also been done to educate the public to understand the inner workings of 911 and what goes into answering an emergency call. So to the companies out there trying to make a quick buck, it won't work because you don't have a story to go with it, or you simply don't understand. And if you're a 911 company, then shame on you. But just like Texas, don't mess with us. Dispatchers are strong, and we unite for our own. Hashtag IM911. So in reading that statement, I consider this issue closed. What we are doing is bigger than anyone would have ever thought. We are finally confronting the stories we have buried, and we are rising above while being recognized for the amazing job we do in 911 on a daily basis. I, for one, am damn proud of all of you. And to those who have shared your stories for the movement, thank you. To those who seek to make money off the success of the movement, well, you might be selling merchandise and making money, but I don't think it will work. Will it? Will it work? We are making a change and giving 911 professionals a voice by sharing the stories of the most vital piece of public safety, and that's the thin gold line. Thank you again to those who support us and to those who continue to share our message. Just yesterday, March 29th, 2018, I received an email from APCO International that my session, Imagine Listening, Your Worst Day is My Every Day, has been chosen to fill a spot at their national conference in Las Vegas, Nevada. Not only that, it has been chosen as a repeat session. I can't tell you how excited I am to do this at a national show. To those attending, make sure you have your stories ready. The experience of the IM911 movement has been amazing, and today, March 30th, 2018, marks 1,000 stories shared on the IM911 Facebook podcast page photo album. It has received 34,000 reactions, over 10,000 comments, and 251,731 shares in counting. The movement continues. If you have any comments, questions, or if you would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to wttpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. That's at 901 Podcast. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. And you can hear this episode along with all of the others on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and all of your favorite podcasting platforms, as well as thejabberlog.com. Have a good one, everyone.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to wttpodcast@gmail.com.